On Saturday, January 6th, Houston Mayor Sylvester Turner gathered with other local and state officials to discuss what they see as inequities in the distribution of the vaccines in Houston and around the state of Texas. The mayor and the other officials also took the time to talk about vaccine hesitancy and why they believe Houstonians and Texans are skeptical to get the vaccines. Particularly, they were focusing on Black and brown communities, how to convince Black and brown communities to get the vaccine and that it's safe and there's nothing to worry about.
I know when I saw the numbers on the national level, where it said that in terms of the vaccine distribution, 60% was roughly to Anglos, and then it came down to 11% with Hispanics. It may have been 5% or so for African Americans, and the Asian population was also in single district. That was highly, highly disturbing, especially when the impact of this virus has been disproportionate on people of color. And yet when the vaccine is on the scene, it seems as though it is the converse of that. And so the question is, how do we address it? Because even if you come from the national level down to the state level, the disparities are still there.
During this press conference, I took the opportunity to ask Mayor Turner and the other officials if they are aware why Houstonians have concerns about vaccines and if there is going to be some sort of local reporting system for Houstonians to report if they had adverse events after receiving a COVID-19 vaccine, including the Moderna vaccine, which was being administered during this press conference.
Mayor Turner and any other officials who'd like to answer. So we're talking about vaccine hesitancy, and of course one of the reasons people are hesitant is because of concerns about injuries, and also people are concerned that the vaccine manufacturers have been indemnified against lawsuits. So if there is adverse effects, people can't sue them. But I'm curious if the city of Houston or on the county level, if we're going to have any sort of similar system that the CDC has, they have the VAERS system, Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System, if there's going to be any way for Houstonians who do have adverse effects to report those to the county or the city.
Yeah, we have access to that system.
So if Houstonians report to the VAERS CDC system, then
yes.
The Houston officials will see.
Yes, they're telling me that the answer is yes.
Any other ways that they could go to direct, like the health department on a local level, or yeah, just
the
CDC?
They can reach out to me, the city council members, or the city of Houston health departments directly.
Thank you.
Okay, any other questions?
Following my questions with the mayor, I also had a chance to catch up with Houston Health Authority, Dr. David Peirce. Some of you may remember that I spoke with Dr. David Peirce a couple months back and included him in my documentary, The PCR Deception, where he specifically mentions the flaws in the way the PCR test is calculated, specifically regarding the cycle threshold level. I also had a chance to ask him whether or not Houston would ever consider mandatory vaccinations for Houstonians.
There was also the CDC making an update, the Florida Department of Health. There's been a few other updates since we last spoke over the summer regarding the concerns around the PCR test. Is there anything you would like to add to that? And in addition to that, how come those concerns are not being talked about on the local level? Like, I often hear you and the mayor just recommend testing, but we don't hear those concerns about, like, the potential for false positives.
So you got to be a little bit careful with it. So with PCR testing in particular, there really is no such thing as a false positive. If they come up positive, the question is, and this goes to the cycle thresholds, is, you know, when that number is really high, it indicates a really low level of viral material. And this has become a little bit problematic in that some people will continue to have low levels of virus in their nose, even though they're, you know, many, many days and sometimes weeks after their illness. And so they continue to, quote unquote, test positive. The challenge is that there are, I have not, and maybe it's out there and I've missed it, so cut me a little slack here, but I'm not exactly sure what you're asking, but the, you know, if there's a CT value above which we should, you know, consider it to be negative, I don't know that anybody's clearly said that.
There was Fauci in one interview said that this was back in the early part of the pandemic. Uh-huh. He recommended that anything above 38 could produce, you know, I understand, like you told me last time, it's not just a binary false positive, but that's kind of part of the problem. It's, you know, yes or no, whenever there could be, there's shades of like,
well, there's,
like, so is it like getting old virus?
It is yes, no. I mean, the test is very clear. It's either yes or no. But then it's like, you know, at what level of yes,
yeah.
Right? And so at these really high cycle thresholds, it means it's, you know, less and less and less amount of virus. And so the question is, and I don't know, and maybe it's out there and I've missed it, at what level, and of course everything in biology is on a spectrum, right? Sure. There's very little that cutoff, right? But somebody needs to sort of define a cutoff where the cycle level is less than this. We have to assume that person is likely to not only be infected, but able to spread the virus. And if the cycle threshold is above that, there's probably so little that they're either not really infected or they're not likely able to spread it. And this, sure. in the WHO, I can't remember what they said. They may have defined that level. I just don't recall. I'd have to look it up.
Okay, do you mind if I just read this quote to you briefly? Sure. It's just from the World Health Organization from December 5th. This was a memo they put out, a notice on their website. Quote, users of RT-PCR reagents should read the IFU carefully to determine if manual adjustment of the PCR positivity threshold is necessary to account for any background noise, which may lead to a specimen with a high cycle threshold result being interpreted as a positive result. And this says, of course, this means for patients with high levels of circulating virus, relatively few cycles will be needed. Conversely, when specimens return a high CT value, it means that many cycles will require to detect virus. In some circumstances, the distinction between background noise and actual presence of the target virus is difficult to ascertain.
That's right. So that kind of goes to my point, is that I would look for somebody who has more expertise than I to sort of define what that threshold is. And I haven't, again, it may be out there and I just missed it, but I haven't heard that anybody's defined that yet. And I would look for the CDC more so than the World Health Organization to define that for the United States. Sure. And I've just not heard that they've done that. And if they did, our laboratory would have been on that, and then they would have changed what they reported to us as positive.
So the change has to come like from the top and then to the laboratories, and then, you know,
right,
to adjust
right. So yeah. So what you want is you want somebody who really has the expertise in that. And of course, here's the deal. In order to make that determination, you've got to be looking at a huge population of samples. And not only do you need to be able to look at the samples and the value, but you need to know what the clinical implications were, the stories with each one of those,
sure.
right? To be able, and it, I guarantee it's not going to be, you know, clear and so, oh, here, 100% of the people above this level are fine, yeah, and 100% below. Right? It's going to kind of do this, but they got to define, you know, it's a by convention is the term we use, but by convention, you got to say, okay, at this level, we all agree that we'll treat these this way and those the other way.
And that seems like the problem, because I know Professor Carl Hennigan in the UK, he's testified in front of Parliament about this a few times, and they've been trying to work with the labs. And like I said, Florida, it's sort of a patchwork. So yeah. I guess the concern, and you know, if you look online, there are a lot of people concerned, like as far as just like say COVID skepticism, right?
Yeah.
People see these things and then they say, okay, well, I don't trust when the Dr. Peirce or the mayor says we've got these amount of new cases,
yeah,
because they're looking at the flaws or the potential flaws in the method that you're using, and
right,
so they're skeptical about
but
it in the first
I would
place.
Say, so to that I would say, I go back to, well, with the exception of somebody cross-contaminating samples, right, that's always possible, but with the exception of that, when they do the sample right, if the virus, if it tests positive, there was virus there,
okay,
right? So it's not a false positive. I mean, there actually was virus there. The question then is, to that individual when they got tested, is that somebody where they need to be in isolation, or are they so far past their illness that the level is now so low?
See,
and of course, the other thing happens. You know, sometimes you can test this very early. Now, the viral load tends to spike up pretty quickly, and then it drifts off really slow. So you got a much bigger window to have low levels detected here than on the front side. It can't happen.
So I guess that's, again, like some of the concern about, like you said, people are being quarantined over PCR tests. They're being, you know, like losing their jobs, you know, things of this sort, or not allowed to travel.
Yeah.
And
yeah, yeah,
these concerns, you know, they're not being really addressed. So, like, I mean, is there any way that you could address this publicly? Like, as far as, you know, not, I know you guys, you're trying to encourage testing, so you probably don't want to do anything that would discourage that. But I think also from just the reality of the situation,
yeah, yeah,
I mean, it needs
well,
to be addressed.
The reality is that somebody, and this can't be done at the local level, otherwise you're going to find out Houston's going to have this value,
sure,
Dallas
sure
will have that level, San Antonio, it needs to be done across the United
couldn't
States.
Couldn't you, as in your capacity, kind of like encourage, like, hey, we
yeah,
do
yeah
need a national standard, or why don't, you know, hey,
oh,
Fauci,
yeah, so,
we need your help.
So
or, you
our national health organizations, they do, they talk about this. So your problem is not, you're not the only one recognizing this problem.
Sure,
I mean,
sure.
And I don't mean to downplay anything that you're doing, but we clearly recognize, because look at it this way, from a public health standpoint, you know, our currency is our credibility, because
mm-hmm
it's all about public messaging. We really have very few tools. And right now our only one real tool that we have is, well, we've got two. One, public messaging, and the other one is the vaccine. Those are the only tools that we have to work with. So public messaging is important. So what you're bringing up, especially with these folks, this is why we tell folks, if you tested positive and you had your symptoms, don't retest. we tell people don't continue to retest. After your 10 days and you're symptom-free, go back to work. Because if you retest, there's a good chance you're going to come up with this positive. Yeah. It's not a false positive. It's just that it's clinically insignificant positive.
Is this picking up a previous virus?
You still got residual virus from your illness, from when you were probably contagious to others. You're still going to test that. So don't test, because it doesn't tell you anything. There's no reason to do that.
Gotcha.
The part of the problem has been, and this is one thing we have done locally, is really talk with employers. Don't ask them for a negative test before they can come back to work. We have been very very clear about that to the employers. Don't do that. That is not helpful.
people out of work who don't need to be out of work.
We know people who actually just had to do that, unfortunately, her mom, to go back to work. Last question. So I'm actually headed to cover an event today, which is like a, I don't want to call it an anti-vaxxer crowd, but it's like a concerned about COVID, lockdown measures and stuff of that sort. And so in your capacity, from your position, are there any plans to require them beyond, obviously I think the vaccines will be required for city employees probably and things that things
perhaps,
under under your control.
Yeah.
That would just be my guess or assumption. But are there any plans to try to encourage, or I don't know if penalize is the right word, but you know, there's talk of immunity passports for people who can't travel without vaccines. Is there anything we could expect on the local level?
Not at this point.
Okay.
I mean, I can't speak to the future, but at this point there's no discussion about that. You know, if it were, you know, you got to be careful with what I say.
Well, what?
I know what I want to say, but I'm afraid you'll quote me.
what percentage of compliance do you think the city needs? I mean, we've seen Fauci say, hey, we need 80%, maybe up to 90% for it to achieve herd immunity, they say, through vaccines. What do you, on the local level, are you aiming for similar numbers or?
Your question really is based on, it has to do with how infectious the virus is. So right now, the one that's most common in the United States, the math suggests that we may need to be in the 70% range of immunity in order to minimize spread. If the UK virus or UK variant or the South African variant take over, which is more easily spread, then that percentage will go up.
So in the event of these variants kind of spreading as much as COVID-19 has, then there would be an expectation of higher levels, potentially up to 100%?
I don't think we would ever, when looking at the models, I don't think we ever get to the point where you have to have 100%, but we can easily get into the 80% range, the 80 to 90% range. And as you know, that will be operationally very difficult, because first of all, there are gonna be some folks the bigger thing may be the people who are just going to refuse, right? That'll be the biggest chunk. But then there are going to be other people who have, and not so much with this vaccine, but there are people who do have allergies to some of the components of the vaccine, and you know, it's the polyethylene glycol is the big one. So I think that the biggest challenge would be the people who don't believe in vaccines, the people who are afraid of vaccines, those folks. Because right now they represent a fairly significant percent of the population, and I've heard
some estimates 40 to 50% or more.
Yeah. And so, if that's the case, and I think those are high estimates, because I think that when I hear those numbers today, I think there's a lot of vaccine hesitancy as opposed to people who are just hard and fast not going to get vaccinated, right? I think the hard and fast not going to get vaccinated, and you fact check this, because I don't really know, but from my memory, I remember hearing that it's somewhere in the 15% range. Well, if we got to have 80+% and 15% are not only saying, you know, not only not now, but never, then that means you got to get 100% of everybody else.
So there would never be a desire of the City of Houston Health Department to take away that ability for a Houstonian to say no if they don't want it?
Well, we wouldn't be able to. I mean, I don't think the Constitution allows it. So,
All right. Thank you.
Sure.
Thank you for your time.
All right.
And an interesting juxtaposition of this debate over vaccine hesitancy and those who are very pro-vaccine, at the same time as this press conference on the other side of Houston, there was an event where a number of different doctors, lawyers, and activists, including myself, were speaking about concerns about lockdowns, vaccines, and masks. Check out my talk from that event.
Hey everyone, I'll talk as loud as possible. Can you hear me? All right, well, thank you to everybody else who is here. I'm not going to waste too much of your time. My name is Derek Rose, as he was just saying. So I'm a freelance investigative journalist. I have a show on 9.1 here in town in Houston and the surrounding area. And I just got back this morning. We had another rally in the Galleria area, what we were calling Rally for Health, Freedom, and Choice. I think a lot of issues you guys probably care about.
Then I went to a press conference, just wrapped up about an hour ago. The mayor of Houston, on the north side of Houston, was issuing a press conference where they were giving out the first 600 vaccinations. So if you didn't hear that, the first 600 Moderna vaccinations in the city of Houston. And the press conference was specifically talking about every one of you. It was about vaccine hesitancy. How do we convince people to take these vaccines? And what neighborhoods should we be going into? And how do we get into the churches and the neighborhood centers? And this is what they're trying to do. They're trying to infiltrate every one of our kind of trusted relationships to see if they can spend money, taxpayer money, and energy to convince you that the vaccines are safe. I'm not a doctor. I'm not here to tell anybody whether they should get vaccinated or not. I just believe in individual liberty, bodily autonomy, and personal choice. Anybody else care about those things? Okay, cool. So that means that despite all of our differences, we're mostly on the same page. I'm personally not a Trump supporter, but I also don't like Joe Biden. And I don't really like much of this system, but I stand with you guys on individual liberty, bodily autonomy, freedom of choice. And for the moment, it seems like the right wing is the only one making any sense, at least for the most part. So I'm always about trying to build coalitions, right? And how can we build together? How can we work together? I know that it's important, at least for me, for us to step out of the partisan bubble. I know people have concerns about the election and concerns about Trump and Biden, etc. I think at the moment, I'm not telling everybody to put those concerns aside, but also to recognize that we have a really beautiful opportunity right now. If you don't remember, last year Joe Biden was about the most unpopular person in the Democratic race. People don't love this guy. They don't, you know, in the same way that a lot of you have a real, like, support and trust in Donald Trump, that doesn't exist on the other side. They just hate Trump, so they're just going with this guy. That's a weakness. So as they learn the truth about Biden and what he represents, that's an opportunity to say, hey, we might have some differences, but can we stand together on these issues? Can we come together and start building? That's what I'm mostly focused on, because if you haven't noticed, this is a global issue. They're already rolling out movie passports in Denmark where you can't travel without getting vaccination. I've been crossing the border a lot for just visiting friends and family, and they now recently announced that if you want to fly back into the U.S. from elsewhere, you got to have a PCR test, which we all know is extremely flawed, right? And we're just sort of, I guess, waiting for them to announce that if you want to drive across the border, you got to face the same thing. I mean, these things are weeks and months away. Many of them were already set into motion before Biden even came into office. So what I'm trying to say is the time for sort of dividing and arguing and spending your time on Facebook, first of all, I want to applaud everybody out here for actually getting out into the real world. Can we just take a moment and say that? This is what we have to do. We don't need to be just behind the computer screens. We need to come out into the streets. You know, I'm the only journalist that's downtown there asking the mayor. I asked for every single one of you, Mr. Mayor, if somebody is injured from a vaccine, do you have a place for them to report? Does the city have any sort of system in place?
Thank you.
But that's a problem. Why am I the only one there asking that? Why are the mainstream media, the Chronicle, and the rest of these people who have a much bigger reach than I, why are none of them asking that? Why, when I ask Dr. David Peirce, the leading health authority in the city of Houston, why they're not talking about these problems with PCR, why is he not saying that on the news? Instead, he's just encouraging you, keep getting tested, keep getting tested. Why are these questions not being asked? Obviously, we know the media is a failure. The media is failed. That's why people like myself and others have to step up and try to do that job. But we also need every single one of you. We should be at the press conferences. We are being censored online, but the internet is only one aspect of this struggle. And I've been doing this for just 10 years, and I've grown up a lot with my activism on social media. But a lot of people forget that putting a flyer in somebody's hand is also very powerful. Having a face-to-face conversation with somebody can go way beyond your Facebook post that nobody ever likes or looks at. We have to remember that the power, the real evolution, the strength is in our conversations, in our day-to-day actions. They don't want us talking to our neighbors. They want us turning against our neighbors. They want us to think because you wear this color or you like this guy or you care about this issue that we can't get along. But that is all lies, guys. That is what they want us to do. And we see all these beautiful children around here. I'm not a parent yet, but I see lots of parents and kids. That's what we're fighting for. I'm about to go visit my nieces and nephews. That's what I'm trying to do. They don't have to go wear masks every single time they go to school. Wear, you know, face the choice of, is dad or mom going to get vaccinated or lose their job? I've already had friends, nurse friends in the city of Houston who have lost their job because they waited until they're not going to get vaccinated. It is going to get worse. Our strength is in each other. I'm sorry to say I heard some people saying with some of the last speakers, well, what's the solution? We all know the problem, right? We can talk about the problems all day. And it feels good to get it off.
help our chest, but it doesn't help us fall forward. It doesn't help us go forward. The solution is in each other. I personally don't see solutions in the ballot box. That system is completely broken. If anything, the Trump administration has shown that how broken that system is. I also don't think things like petitions are extremely effective. They can show that, hey, on paper, I care about this. But what these people are really afraid of, and I don't mean, in a violent way, I just mean they're terrified that we stop fighting and we start getting organized. They're terrified that instead of just me being up at the next press conference asking the mayor, why aren't they talking about the problems with the PCR test? Why are they pushing vaccines when they know that there are injuries? Instead, there should be 10, there should be 20 people. Every event they go to, they should be confronted and approached and asked these questions. That's the truth of the matter. Until they recognize that they can't just go hide in their buildings, or they can't just go in their little elite circles and laugh at us or ignore us or call us extremists or call us names or whatever, then they're going to keep pushing. The solution, I believe, as I said, is in ourselves. And this is not just sort of some vague thing that's come together. I hope to create something called the Freedom Cell Network. The website is freedomcells.org, C-E-L-L-S, freedomcells.org. This is not another social network for you just to go on and post pictures and talk with people. The whole purpose is to join the account, to create an account with your interests and your goals, and to use our two maps. We have a cell map or a group map, and we have members maps. You can search to find people within your area, 5 miles, 10 miles, 15 miles. Use the website to connect to them, to connect to other local groups, and then meet in the real world. This is what we have to start doing. We need to stop focusing on what we're doing online, because we're realizing how much control they have there. And there's a lot of people working on beautiful solutions to decentralize the internet, to get us past censorship. But in the meantime, the strongest weapon we have is this: looking each other in the face, talking directly to each other. It does something to another human being, but when you're just an angry person on the internet, your chances of reaching them don't count great. Trust me, I spent plenty of hours wasting my time debating people on all sides of this argument. I don't know how many of them have been convinced to come over to our side, but I've spent a lot of my time doing it. But we're short on time, so we need to do what's most effective, and that's communicating with each other. That's stop putting up walls against each other, recognizing the things we have in common. Even the people who you think you have absolutely nothing in common. I guarantee you, if you can get some of these left-wingers who don't like Biden to see that, look, if you support these things like calling anti-vaxxers extremists or people of the opposite persuasion, extremists, and everywhere that goes, that's a dangerous road, guys. Calling your political enemies domestic terrorists, you might want to say that to some people you don't like on the left, but ultimately that's going to be used against all of us. And it will be used against all of us. I know many people have started to wake up in the last couple years, but some of us have seen what has been coming since 9/11. All of this is just the post-9/11 stuff now coming home to focus on the American people. They lied to us about 9/11, they lied to us about so many other things, and they continue to lie to us. And now, here it is, the war on domestic terror. And every one of you who question the government, every one of you who don't want a vaccine is seen as an extremist. And that's not a message of fear, this is just awareness. Being a free person is now being an extremist. Talking about loving your country or wanting to make things better, or maybe just questioning the people in power makes you an extremist. And if that's what it means, well, then I think we should all be proud to be extremists, because if not, if you're being quiet, you're being silent, you're being blind during these times, then you're acquiescing to what is happening, and you're selling out the future generations, and they're depending on us. The last thing I'll say is, I come from an indigenous background. My family has been indigenous to Texas and to this area for generations. And one of the things we talk about in our communities is the seven generations and beyond. So that's the last thought I want you to think about. Not only do the actions we're taking right now, guys, again, those of you who have kids right in front of you, you're holding your kid, you can see immediately what you're fighting for. But we're also fighting for their children and your grandchildren and the people we're never going to meet. We're fighting for those seven generations and beyond that we may never actually meet in person. But the steps we take today or do not take are directly affecting the world that they're going to be born into. Are they going to be born into a world where individual liberty, bodily autonomy, and the pursuit of happiness are respected, or a world where if you don't agree, then you get shut up, you get quarantined in centers if you don't take the vaccines, if you don't want the shots, if you don't want the tests. And they're coming after your paycheck too. That's another way they're going to squeeze you. If you don't want to get the vaccine, well, sorry you can't work, sorry you can't travel, sorry you can't bank here, sorry you can't go to the grocery store. The answer is for us to start building freedom cells or local groups, pods, health services, whatever you want to call them, and get organized. Not so we can try to overthrow them to become the bad people. This is a non-violent, peaceful movement that I'm at least involved in. But so that we can build a better world we know is possible. Unfortunately, they have control of much of this world that we exist in. I think the answer is to build something better. And that's not as easy as just pushing a button every 4 years or putting your faith in another human being. It takes work, time, effort, energy, sweat, blood, tears. But I think that's what we can do. Thank you guys for being here. Thank you, Derek.
This is Derek Bros with The Conscious Resistance. Until next time, remember, you are powerful, you are beautiful, and you are free.
This is Derek Bros.
Derek Bros.
Derek Bros.
This is Derek Bros of The Conscious Resistance.
I'm here in Standing Rock.
That man is wanted in 5 different countries, Chile, Argentina, Brazil.
We've been fighting a long time. We've all lost so very much, so many loved ones gone.
Don't you fucking tease that horse!
You are not alone. There are pockets of resistance all around the planet. We are at the brink.
Above
all, stay alive. You have no idea